Tuning in. Nah, we're not video streaming tonight. I just don't feel like it. You know what I'm saying? A quick apology to the website, the newspaper, Examiner.com in San Francisco. Examiner.com. On the program the other night, I had referred to theexaminer.com as a conservative website. It is actually not conservative nor liberal. They have writers who may or may not take those different points of view. For the most part, in going back and taking a look at the website, I find that most of the writers are, in fact, the contributors are mostly neutral. The Examiner has an article about me on its webpage today, and in the article it says both Milbank, referring to Dana Milbank of the Washington Post, and Malloy call the Examiner.com conservative. Should be noted that the Examiner.com has both left and right wing contributors, but most are neutral. And that is very much the case, and I do apologize to the Examiner.com for misidentifying who they are and what they do. And thanks to the Examiner for carrying the article. I appreciate it. yesterday, when we were talking about China gearing up to increase the size, scope, depth, and lethality of its military in preparation for the ultimate confrontation with India and or the United States, or the United States and or India, I may mention the fact that the Chinese are also investing in a huge shale oil field or natural gas field in South Texas that will ultimately, according to reports, produce 20,000 jobs. And they are in partnership with an American company, an American-based company. I don't know if the American-based company really is American-based or if it just has some office in America, the United States, and has its loophole office in the Bahamas. Who knows with these rat bastards anymore? But anyway, the point was, a couple of points. First of all, if the Chinese can do it, why aren't the American entrepreneurs doing the same thing? And secondly, it was in reference to, I guess it was Lenin. A lot of people have written to me and said it was Lenin who said, the capitalists will sell us the rope with which we hang them. It was in that context, the Chinese coming to the United States to develop these fossil fuel excavations so that they can use that fossil fuel to eventually attack the United States, if one wants to believe that. And I happen to think that's probably what will happen. Why am I laughing? Because I don't know. I just, you know, the Karl Rove and the Republicans and the Chamber of Commerce are collecting so much money from India and China and Dubai and, oh, my God, all over the world to defeat the Kenyan who is sitting in the White House, that it just cracks me up. Karl Rove is the most traitorous rat bastard, I think, in modern times. Karl Rove makes deals with demonic forces on this planet. Karl Rove would make a deal with Osama bin Laden to attack the United States again and clear the way for bin Laden to do that if Karl Rove thought that that would end Obama's presidency. Karl Rove is the worst kind of traitor. The very worst kind. He doesn't just betray the country. He betrays what this country is all about as it was laid out, attempted to be laid out by the framers. Karl Rove stinks. He's a filthy, filthy human being. But I digress. I was talking about how we provide our enemies with the... that's what capitalism always does. It provides the enemies. It thinks it's dominating. It thinks it is extracting. It thinks that it is conquering, when in fact, capitalism may have a run where it does that for a while, but eventually, given the nature of capitalism, it devours itself. It has to die. It simply does, by definition. By definition of how it operates, eventually it folds back on itself, devours itself, and dies. It's just that process in the meantime that is so god-awful for people on this planet. Anyway, George in Oregon writes, Mike, not only has our electronics technology been given to China, but our aircraft technology has gone there too, courtesy of corporate America. McDonnell Douglas, now part of Boeing, started manufacturing aircraft there in the 80s, along with transferring some of the most advanced manufacturing and construction techniques available, along with the package. The U.S. has long been the leader in aircraft development and manufacturing, but a lot of the technology has been given away for the price of cheap labor. The multinationals don't care, as long as they make lots and lots of money. Look at the latest Chinese military aircraft for an example of what they got for free from the greedsters. George in Oregon. During the 80s, let's see, who was president then? Oh, that's right, that senile old bastard Ronald Reagan. I'm sorry, Ron Reagan Jr., I happen to like you, but your dad was just, well, you know, let me take that back. That rat bastard Ronald Reagan, President Ronald Reagan, and the rat bastard vice president of his, who eventually became president, George Herbert Walker Bush. That's the 80s! No way you can get around it! Ah! But you see, we have no collective memory in this country. I will guarantee you, you walk out on the street right now, right? Well, okay, it's 9:13 in the evening here in the East, but walk out on the street tomorrow. Walk up to the nearest intelligent-looking person, not somebody who just got out of a car with a Republican bumper sticker on it, but just go up to any person and say to them, what was a defining event in U.S. foreign policy during the 80s? Wouldn't that be funny? As they stood there and looked at you and said, yeah, I'm dumb. Ask them if during the, and the 80s, of course, was at the time that Donald Rumsfeld was selling poison technology to Saddam Hussein so that we could once again, do something bad to the Iranians. It wasn't bad enough in the 50s. We had to do it in the 80s, and then we're doing it again in the 21st century. Jesus God, we hate the Iranians. It's not that we hate the Iranians. We just hate the fact that their tacky-ass little country sits on all that oil. And that's our oil! Isn't it? We act as though it is. But the 80s, so much that destroyed this country 30 years later began in the 80s. Under Ronald Reagan, this amiable dunce, I believe that's the way he was referred to by Republicans, an amiable dunce who even Herbert Bush had the clarity of mind temporarily so to identify Reaganomics as voodoo economics. Remember all that? No, of course you don't. But stop anybody on the street and ask them about the 80s, and they will say to you, if you say what was defining one of the defining political moments in the 80s, you'll probably get the answer, that's when Bono and U2 were, making music about the troubles in Northern Ireland, wasn't it? And then ask them what the troubles were. All right, we have a break here. When we come back, I want to tell you something about a program called Women in Construction. What? No, seriously, I want you to hear this. Women in construction. Stick around. We have a long way to go here before I grant you the mercy you so desperately seek after 5 minutes of this program. Keeps on bleeding, nation bleeding. Talk about emails I've gotten from a number of people that, you know, you hear their names a lot. This is from Kate in the Desert. Kate in the Desert gets around a lot. She writes, Mike, is there any room in your topics the next couple of days for this? And then she explains it to me. Women in construction was something I worked at getting started in Pascagoula, Mississippi. The main energy of the effort went to Biloxi, however. There are over 100 low-income women from the Gulf Coast in Mississippi who are now skilled and employed as a result. The Women in Construction program is relying on the public's support to compete for a grant. Voting is underway, and the public is encouraged to visit the Foundation for the Mid-South's website. And then she sent me the link, and I'm going to give it to you in a second. Kate writes, I appreciate any word you can get out, because it would please me if they could get the $50,000 grant award. Your audience is always good about stepping up for good causes. If this doesn't get into your topics, not a problem. Thanks, Kate, who's now in Big Sky program, a Big Sky country. The Women in Construction program is relying on the public support to compete for this grant. And this is one of those deals where you vote, and whichever project gets the most votes, literally, will win these grants. So, excuse me, the website is, you ready to write this down? I'll give it to you again. It's FND. That stands for Foundation. F like Frank, N like Nellie, D like David. FND, Mid-South. All one word, FNDMidSouth.org. Now, when you go there, excuse me, just click on Mississippi. You'll see what I mean when you get there. And there's a place there where you can vote. All right? Here's the website again. www.fndmidsouth.org. Very simple. fndmidsouth.org. This stands for Foundation, midsouth.org. fndmidsouth.org. And this is one of those programs that, I mean, my God, Women in Construction Program. There are now over 100 low-income women from the Gulf Coast of Mississippi who are working in construction and making money. I would expect that just about anybody, especially right-wingers, when they're not, you know, talking about what a jerk I am. You right-wingers, this would be right up your alley, right? Women in Construction Program. So if you would, if you're listening to the program tonight, please do that, okay? FNDMidSouth.org, FNDMidSouth.org, and then click on Mississippi. And vote. It's not money. You don't have, not a dime. This is for a grant. But they have to have the votes in order to get the grants. I don't know why these foundational grants are set up this way. I guess it's just to increase awareness or show support or what have you. But this website doesn't ask you for a dime, nothing. And they're not going to send you any emails requesting anything 6 months from now. All you have to do is go to FND, F like Frank, N like Nelly, D like David, FNDMidSouth.org, and click on Mississippi and vote. Will you do that? I hope you will. All right? I'll give it again later. The email address. All right, what else we got? Oh, yeah. Word came out late this afternoon that all 50 states now are the attorneys general from all 50 states have joined in a probe of the U.S. mortgage industry. A joint investigation was announced today because of all the fraud, all these dirty sons of bitches, this mortgage industry, what they've done. First of all, they loaded up people with loans they could never afford. Secondly, they're foreclosing on houses without proper documentation as to who owns what. The state attorneys general are looking at allegations some banks did not properly review files or submitted false statements to evict people from their homes during this foreclosure crisis. Well, you know, I can save all those attorney generals an awful lot of time and effort. Just listen to this psychopathic bastard Glenn Beck and his ilk on radio. They'll tell you, well, this is not a problem that should involve the banks. This was a problem caused by Acorn. Don't you remember? Acorn caused all of this. Isn't that what all the right-wingers were frothing at the mouth about 3, 4, 5 months ago, 6 months ago? Acorn did it! Well, Glenn, you don't mean you lied about something else, you piece of human waste, do you? Oh, my goodness! All 50 attorneys general. And you know what? Some of them are Republican! Funny stuff! I love it. Before the hour, if you didn't write it down now, okay? FNDMidSouth.org, FND, for F like Frank, N like Nelly, D like David, FNDMidSouth.org, click on Mississippi, and vote for the Women in Construction Program. Thank you very much. How about this Carl Paladino? You know, I say so many times in this program that every single stinking, filthy Republican or libertarian or teabagger is just that, a filthy, stinking libertarian, Republican or teabagger, right-winger. All of them are liars. All of them are cowards. All of them are nuts. Paladino is just, I don't know, he's just one of the more vocal examples. You know, the other day Paladino said kids shouldn't be brainwashed into thinking it's okay to be gay. And they shouldn't be taken to disgusting gay pride parades. But he had no problem when his son ran a nightclub in, Buffalo? Downtown Buffalo, a nightclub, which was once dubbed Buffalo's gay club of the moment. The name of the club was Cobalt. And he had no problem cashing the rent checks from Cobalt and another gay club called Buddies 2. Both of which were located for years in buildings that Carl Paladino owned. Do you understand what I'm saying here? You hypocritical son of a bitch. Isn't this always the case? The most vocal advocates against those damn queers usually is either gay and closeted or involved in this case, commerce with gay folk, right? From May 2004 through June 2006, William Palladino, that'd be his son, co-owned a nightclub in downtown Buffalo. Liquor license records show the club was run under the corporate name 2975 Group LLC, while the building it was housed in was owned by one of Carl Palladino's many companies, the Huron Group LLC. It was called Cobalt in 2004 and much of 2005, catering exclusively to a gay clientele, holding drag queen nights and featuring boy tenders behind the bar. In March 2005, in a review of Cobalt in the Buffalo News, it was described as way gay, noting the queens, the techno, the cocktails, the kind of gyration normally confined to Manhattan, was in full flaming force at Cobalt. Cobalt wasn't the only gay club paying rent to Carl Palladino. Buddies, too, was housed in a Palladino building on Franklin Street in Buffalo. Operating under the name Queen City Entertainment, it described itself as, quote, a bar where anyone and everyone is welcome and prejudices are left at the door. Carl Palladino cashed fat rent checks from Buffalo gay bars, Buddies 2, and Cobalt. Had no problem with that, did you, you crazy son of a bitch, huh, Carl? Had no problem with money from those terrible, terrible men in the Speedos, right? Over the last 3 days, of course, last week or so, Palladino spent much time attacking what he calls the homosexual agenda. What would that be, Carl? Running a bar in your building and giving you the money for the rent? Is that the homosexual agenda? Running a business? I thought you teabag bastards were in favor of small businesses. Huh, Carl? You hypocritical snot. A couple days ago when he was at the ultra-super-mega-orthodox synagogue in Sunday, he said, in Brooklyn, he said, I don't want children brainwashed into thinking homosexuality is an equally valid and successful option. It isn't. On the Don Imus show on Monday, he said, I don't think I'd be proud to take my child to Gay Pride Parade, where you have these men in Speedos grinding up against each other in the back of a truck. Although I do like to watch. I just don't like how my kids go. You know what I'm saying? He also implied that homosexuality was being taught in schools. Jesus Christ. It's being taught in schools. Oh, my God. What is with these people? What planet are they from? Class, open your books. Today, it's Gay 101. Let's see. Let's start with, I don't want to go back too far. Let's start with Jesus and his disciples. Now, class, I want to see a show of hands. 12 disciples and one leader. How many of those people were gay, do you suppose, statistically? Okay. Blah, blah, blah. All right, let's move forward a little bit. Or backward a little bit. Forward, backward. Alexander the Great. Oh, let's go back a little bit further. Philip of Macedonia. Alexander's father. You want to go back a little further? Was Alexander the Great gay? How about Alexander Hamilton? There's something about the name Alexander. How about Alexander Hamilton? How about Aaron Burr? How about Abraham Lincoln? How about Walt Disney? I mean, you can just keep going. Just keep going and going and going. When you are studying homosexuality 101 in our public school system, which Carl Palladino insists is being taught. Homosexuality is being taught in schools. Now, yesterday he backed off, apologizing, quote, for any comment that may have offended. May have offended any comment. Suppose I sat here, Collins, started talking about greasy Wapdago Italian thugs. What do you think? What do you think? Would that be, you know, like offensive? You think? Greasy Dago Italian wops. What do you think, Carl? Is that offensive? All right. I apologize if that offended anybody. It offends me, Carl. I happen to be Italian. Greasy Dago wop. That's me. You filthy, filthy scum sucker. You'll take money from gay people. Or, that makes it sound like they're different from us. You take money from people who happen to be gay, won't you, Carl? Eh? I bet you would take money from brown-skinned people, too, right, Carl? Eh? And Orthodox Jews, right, Carl? Eh? You belong to that branch of the Catholic Church, Carl, that still insists the Jews killed Jesus. And that, there you are in a super mega Orthodox congregation last Sunday talking your crap, reading it off a piece of paper. Who handed you the paper, Carl? What were you there for? A little money? A little guilt? Yeah, is that what you were looking for? You hypocrite. His campaign manager, Michael Caputo. Hey, Michael. What about this? Eh? Michael Caputo did not respond to questions about the Paladino's involvement with the gay clubs. In fact, Michael Caputo said, hey, shut up, all right? Just shut up. Meanwhile, as hordes of politicians and pundits blasted Paladino, conservative columnist Ann Coulter came to his defense on Fox News Channel, calling him a, quote, great warrior, end quote, who wants to cut taxes. Yes! He wants to cut taxes. I'm a great warrior. Oh, my God. Michael Caputo, hey, Caputo, what about your man? What's this? What's this? Wait, he owned a gay club. Don't you remember the episode on The Sopranos, what they did to, what's his name, who was turned out to be gay? Yeah, remember, he's married, got a couple of kids. Remember what they did to him in the motel room? You remember that, Michael? So what? I mean, you know, here's your boy Paladino, right? Collecting money from people having to be gay, right? Eh? What's your boy got to say, Michael? What do you got to say?
I ain't saying nothing.
I hate these people with a passion that is almost overwhelming. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Eh? God. But I guess, it's a matter of free speech. It's a matter of free enterprise and free speech. Last week, thinkprogress.org published an exclusive story about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's foreign fundraising operation. U.S. Chamber of Commerce, to whom $1 million was given by America's soon-to-be favorite fascist, if he isn't already, Rupert Murdoch. Remember that? Think Progress noted the Chamber of Commerce raises money from foreign-owned businesses for the Chamber's 501c6 entity. That's the same account that finances its unprecedented $75 million attack on Democrats. While the Chamber is notoriously secretive, the thrust of the story at Think Progress involved the disclosure of fundraising documents that U.S. Chamber staffers have been distributing to solicit even more foreign money. Donated directly to the Chamber's 501c6. More on this when we come back. And you've heard Karl Rove say, oh, Barack Obama's a liar. He's such a liar for saying this. He's a liar. No, Karl, he's not. You are.
We'll be right back.
Frankie Wright. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Think Progress documented three different ways the Chamber, U.S. Chamber of Commerce, fundraises from foreign corporations. First, an internal fundraising program called Business Councils used to solicit direct, largely foreign contributions to the Chamber. Two, direct contributions from foreign multinationals like BP, Siemens, and Shell Oil. And three, from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce network of AmCham affiliates. Those are foreign chambers, foreign chapters of the chamber composed of American and foreign companies. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce quickly acknowledged that it receives direct foreign money, but simply replied, quote, we are not obligated to discuss our internal procedures, end quote. Instead of providing any documentation or proof to demonstrate foreign money is not being used for electioneering purposes, the chamber launched an aggressive media strategy to first attack Think Progress with petty name-calling, and second, to confuse the media by highlighting the chamber's relatively minor AmCham fundraising, which the U.S. Chamber of Commerce says, also without any documentation, they say it totals approximately 100 grand. From all 115 international AmCham chapters. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce and media largely ignored Think Progress's revelation about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's direct foreign fundraising to its 501c6 account, which is then used for attack ads against Democrats. Yesterday, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's chief lobbyist, Bruce Joston, who has been spoon-feeding much of the media distortions about Think Progress's report, went on Fox News, who, as I mentioned, whose parent company donated a million bucks to the chamber recently for this ad campaign. Bruce Joston went on Fox News to again try to dilute the issue by dissembling about the chamber's fundraising and membership. He said, quote, we have probably 60 or so foreign multinational companies in our membership that we have had for decades, many of which have been in the United States for half a century or a century, end quote, said Joston. The chamber is being deceptive. In addition to multinational members of the chamber headquartered abroad, like BP, Shell Oil, and Siemens, a new Think Progress investigation has identified at least 84 other foreign companies that actively donate to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's 501c6 account. And then Think Progress provides a chart detailing the annual dues foreign corporations have indicated that they give directly to the chamber, and it's lots of India, some France, some Canada, some Switzerland, more India, the UK, lots of India, Singapore, more India, India all over the place, the Netherlands, Germany, UK, India, Australia, Switzerland, Singapore, France, India, Canada, India, UK, India, Bahrain, Dubai, on and on. There's a whole list here. The total is $885,000, not the 100 grand that this lying son of a bitch Bruce Joston said. And as Think Progress writes, again, all of these annual dues are collected in the same 501c6 that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is using to run partisan attack ads against Democrats. The data that they provide here reflects information from public sources. And the chamber likely has many more foreign corporations as dues-paying members, but refuses to divulge any of the funders for their ad campaign. Unfortunately, many reporters in the traditional press covered this story, but missed the entire point of our reporting. Most reporters from the New York Times, McClatchy, the Associated Press, etc., never contacted Think Progress, instead opting to only interview chamber officials. Here's how the chamber's unusual foreign fundraising operation works. According to this internal chamber staff report obtained by Think Progress, the Chamber of Commerce has an international division devoted to promoting free trade, and related policy issues. U.S. Chamber staffers based in Washington, D.C., with offices in the Chamber's building on H Street, create what is called bilateral business councils or fundraising programs to solicit money from foreign corporations in Korea, Egypt, Brazil, Bahrain, India, and other places. For instance, the Chamber's U.S.-Egypt Business Council directs potential members to wire their checks to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The application also notes that checks should be marked, "Attention, Lila Basogi." Basogi is a regular staffer at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Promotions to get these foreign companies to join the chamber have included promises that foreign firms obtain access to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and everything that it does. The information in that's provided by Think Progress, and you should go to their website, thinkprogress.org, and take a look at this. Jesus Christ, it'll make your blood run cold. Well, that'll keep Cheney away from you anyway. He doesn't like cold blood. Again, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is running a $75 million attack campaign against Democrats. And the reason they're doing it is because U.S. Chamber of Commerce is one of the point organizations to finish the coup de grace that was started against this this country 30 years ago, and to end it, completely end it, and turn this country into the corporatist state that would make Mussolini proud. Go to thinkprogress.org and read this. Just read this. And if it doesn't point out the fact that Karl Rove is a goddamn liar who goes on any television, in front of any television camera that will have him to repeat the lies, Karl Rove should be sent somewhere.
Excuse me, is this...
Story corner for you. Huh? You ready for this? Let's play the Uncle Mike Story Corner music. There you go. It's time once again, kiddies, for another episode of Uncle Mike Story Corner. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling, which is now a wholly owned subsidiary of the Chinese government. Tonight's story is entitled Snowballs from Hell. And it's written by Mike in Lucia Falls, Washington. Snowballs from Hell. Colonialism as a form of government started in about 1590, ended around 1950, and was replaced by social democracies. Here in the United States, today, like it or not, we live in one such social democracy, as does most of Europe, Australia, New Zealand, the rest of North America. In our democratic republic, the people govern themselves through elected representatives, which is the democratic aspect, banded together in community. Many hands make light work, strength in numbers, etc., which is the social aspect. Now, keep in mind, capitalism is an economic system non-specific to the social democratic form of government. Even totalitarian regimes like China, Vietnam, and now Cuba are governments with various forms of capitalist economies. The first purpose of our social democratic state in the USA was to provide for the common good through community and individuality, directing change by way of our elected representatives to preserve life and liberty for the pursuit of happiness. In a decision by the conservative U.S. Supreme Court in 2010, a so-called free speech ruling, unlimited corporate funding, in other words, legalized graft, resulted in a takeover of the United States Congress by an onshore and offshore corporate interest running poser conservative shell candidates. In other words, most Republicans and many so-called Blue Dog Democrats. In the desperate clutches of a bitter jobless recovery caused by 30 years of business and banking dereg and U.S. jobs outsourcing by both parties, crucial swing state Democratic Party candidates were unable to get out the vote of a demoralized unemployed populace in the 2010 midterm election. Likewise, paralyzed from the humiliating defeat by Obama in 2008, old Republican Party regulars had splintered into right-wing fundamentalist factions. The Tea Party, various religious fanatics, the NRA, birthers, Nazi reenactors, right-wing militias, and the like, yet funded by big corporate coffers. Arguably, they might have been defeated, even handily, in a general election year face-off. But having sold their souls to the deep pocket interests of the multinationals, laundering questionable at best campaign funds through the Chamber of Commerce and other right-wing 501c6 think tanks, the latter run by failed Republican politicians of past elections, in aggregate, in the closest midterm election in U.S. history, the Republicans took control of the U.S. House by 2 seats. The Democratic defeat was largely blamed on the weak turnout of students and 2008 Obama supporters. It's largely agreed by historians that 2010 was the year that the social democratic form of government in the USA was officially replaced by international corporatism, otherwise known as fascism. The 112th Congress was forced into gridlock, with Obama denied the ability to continue the stimulus and other progressive policies desperately needed to continue the fragile recovery from what had become known as the George W. Bush Great Recession of 2007. The Republican agenda turned to repeal of health care and alternative energy initiatives and began hollow impeachment proceedings against the president for the trumped-up charge of being a card-carrying socialist. The resulting catastrophic economic meltdown that followed canceled all gains previously accomplished. The dollar devalued to a third-world currency at 3 Chinese yuan as real estate property values from coast to coast plummeted again, this time by 135% in the fourth quarter of 2011, while unemployment rose to 17.5% in 6 months. Corporate profits also rose meagerly when taxes on the wealthiest were cut to 10%. By an act of Congress, signed into law in 2012 by President-elect Sarah Palin. Vast sums of foreign wealth transferred almost overnight from the dollar to the yen, as Chinese, Arab, and Soviet shell business units began literally stealing U.S. real estate a dime on the dollar. The American economy was subsequently ameliorated and never recovered. In 2014, rogue elements of the U.S. military and CIA started dual ground wars across Eastern Europe and South America, but the federal government had already effectively been dissolved. Each state would become failed oligarchs, run by failed oligarchs by 2020, ruled instead by gangs of right-wing militias and thugs pillaging the countryside for bounty and booty. The middle class decimated. The population living in conditions of severe poverty, while international corporations flourished across Europe, the Middle East, and China. Earth's oceans rose 50 feet in 14 years, devastating the coastlines around the globe, causing widespread famine. Ocean surface temperatures soared 6 degrees at the equator, while carbon dioxide emissions continued to rise unabated. Those with the wherewithal fled. Christians prayed for the end times. Atheists questioned their lack of faith. The meek had indeed inherited the earth, what was left of it, and everyone else wished they had voted Democrat in November of 2010. Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Snowballs from Hell. Written by Mike in Lucia Falls, Washington. Oh, my. That reminded me, when I read that today, it reminded me a little bit of that that piece by Busta Rhymes. Just remind me. Oh, you want to do some phone calls? Oh, no, we have phone troubles again. This is from Jim. Mike, just got Monday's podcast. I have a thought from the late George Carlin regarding reenactors, people that do the Civil War thing and now the Nazi thing. It has been said that Carlin once told a bunch of Civil War reenactors to use live ammunition. Maybe the Nazi asshats in Ohio can entertain during halftime at the Michigan-Ohio State game. Jim. He's referring to the guy who is running against Marcy Kaptur, I believe, in Ohio, who likes to dress up like Waffen SS and run around singing what was the German song? The Horst Wessel song? Is that what it was? Tom writes, well, Tom will have to wait. We have a break here. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. There is a movement afoot now to put a total freeze on home foreclosures because, obviously, this is a tremendous scam that has been run once again against the American people. We had the savings and loan scam where people lost everything they had. We had the Enron scam where a lot of investors and people who had Enron stock went right down the crapper with Enron. I mean, it's just been scam after scam after scam. This is what capitalism does. It's also what the bad guys on Wall Street, which is all of them, this is the kind of stuff that they do. This is like those, every once in a while you read about a Ponzi scheme in some village in Bangladesh or the former Yugoslavia, where people think they're buying into the wonders of capitalism, they're actually being screwed. Well, that's what Wall Street has become. It's a huge Ponzi operation. It is a casino. The people who are making the money now use computerized training or computerized trading. I don't know if you saw the thing on 60 Minutes on Sunday night, where they operate now in milliseconds. You know, just get a penny here, a penny there. But if you're trading a million shares or 10,000 shares, at the end of the day, you made a few bucks, right? Blah, blah, blah. So there's been a call for a total freeze on foreclosures because of all the filth, lies, deceit, and fraud committed by not Acorn. Acorn, committed by the banking and financial services industry. They had a hell of a time, didn't they, over the past 5-6 years until they collapsed, almost collapsed the global economy. It's one of the wonders of capitalism. This is inherent in capitalism. It keeps happening. It will never stop until finally capitalism goes up in flames. Problem with that is it might take the rest of us up in flames, too. So anyway, ta-da, ta-da, ta-da. The calls for a total freeze on foreclosures is getting some opposition from Wall Street and the Obama White House. Oh, but he's a socialist! You're right. So is your mama. The predictions are that clearing up faulty paperwork and resuming evictions may take as little as 2 weeks. No, 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 it won't. There are enough attorneys out there who will make damn good and sure that their clients do not get hosed any more than they already have been. However, a complete halt, according to a statement from President Tim Ryan at the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association, which is Wall Street's biggest lobby. These are the real bloodsuckers on this economy. These are the sons of bitches that do nothing. They build nothing. They grow nothing. They make nothing. They manufacture nothing. They lend money to nobody. They shuffle money around this top 0.1%. And they use the pension funds and the retirement funds and the IRAs or the, 401Ks and all these financial instruments that stupid-ass middle-class, working-class Americans thought, oh, hey, we can get a piece of the pie, too. Except they're now all empty. Anyway, Tim Ryan at this Wall Street lobbying house said, quote, a complete halt would be, his word, catastrophic for the U.S. economy and would hurt home sales. You expect that from a scum sucker like Tim Ryan. But a day earlier, David Axelrod, the senior advisor to Barack Obama, also said a moratorium would damage the housing market. The housing market? What in the hell is Axelrod talking? Where's the housing market, David? What housing market? You mean this train wreck out here where you don't live? Bank of America halted foreclosures in all 50 states last week, while lenders like J.P. Morgan Chase and Ally Financial have stopped evictions in 23 states where the courts supervise home seizures. These banking highway banditry operations are checking allegations that employees used unverified or false data to speed the process. Lawmakers and attorneys general and community groups have called for banks to follow Bank of America's example and stop. But come on, guys. Didn't this putrid bastard Glenn Beck and the rest of his teabag, tea party freakoids, haven't they revealed the truth to the American public? It was Acorn! It was a bunch of Negroes who went out and got loans they couldn't afford. Ah, they're the ones who brought down the global financial services industry. You didn't know that? That's what these right-wing piglets have been saying. More in a moment.
Hey, 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 hey. All the children on the street. All they was running out the front door, running out the back door, flying on their feet. Singing, Papa, oh, Mama, oh, come see what we have seen there. They meet in the vision, stranded in a limousine. Everybody
Redefining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
Five before the hour. The New York-based Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association, which is a lobbying organization that wants to continue to loot, pillage, rape, and burn the American economy without any restrictions placed upon it by the executive or the legislative branch, that part of those two branches that they don't already control, had a spokesperson who said, quote, it would be catastrophic to impose a system-wide moratorium on all foreclosures, and such actions could do damage to the housing market and the economy. The mortgage market, investors, and the health of the economy are all interrelated. Now, isn't that an interesting comment? The comment by Tim Ryan, who is the head of SIFMA, Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association. Have these people, including David Axelrod, Obama's senior advisor, have these people taken a look at what the housing market is, what it's become, what has happened to the economy? So what these two spokespersons are saying, one speaking for the administration, you know, those socialists, and the other speaking for the predatory bastards on Wall Street, what they are saying together is, let the foreclosures continue, no matter how many of them were fraudulently filed in court, no matter how many of the documents were signed by people who did nothing but robo-sign whatever was put in front of them. Let the foreclosures continue. Screw the family who has done nothing wrong. To hell with the people who have desperately tried to save their homes. Obama administration told them there would be funds available. Wall Street said, the real estate people said, we'll try to work with you. All of this is a lie. So David Axelrod and the Piglet, who is the spokesperson for the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association, a huge lobbying firm, that would be Tim Ryan. Tim Ryan and David Axelrod are both saying to people who are caught in the horrible pinchers that were put together by corporate America and filthy scum like Dick Cheney and George Bush and Karl Rove and the rest of these people who ground this country into the dirt for 8 years, they're saying to people, sorry, we want your house. We don't care how much fraud was committed. We don't care who lied to you. Besides, we had our paid whores in media trying to explain to you it was all Acorn that brought this about. Acorn! Can't you dumbasses say Acorn? And leave us righteous, upstanding American capitalists working our fingers to a nub here in Wall Street alone? SIFMA, the lobbying group, which represents Wall Street securities firms, banks, and, asset managers, said such a moratorium would, their word, unjustly create losses for housing market investors. Unjustly? Unjustly create losses for housing market investors? What is a housing market investor? Huh? Those were the filthy animals who bought into the scams put out there by the mortgage industry and the watchdog organizations, the ratings firms that were supposed to verify and did verify all this slop, trillions of dollars of slop put out there for the suckers to invest in. And now the suckers, good capitalists all, want somebody else, i.e. you and me, to pay their gambling debts. Oh, a moratorium would not work. A moratorium would unjustly create losses for housing market investors. Unjustly? Housing market investors? Let's gather together 10,000 people who are about to be foreclosed on and ask them, one and all, man, woman, gay, straight, Jew, Gentile, ask them all, do you give a rat's ass about the housing market investors who took you for a ride and now want to take your home, and how this would be an unfair, unjust prohibition on their thievery? Do you care? Listen, and you can hear the scream as these people, these 10,000, demand the blood of these bastards. Are you kidding me? You know, I'll tell you something else. Lately, I've been catching hell around the internet from, not from right-wing pigs. I don't care about them. But somebody sent me a link here. There's a blog site, The Moderate Voice. It says, an internet hub for moderate centrists and independents. And there's a little bit in here about moi. It says, not all polarizing, demonizing talk show hosts are on the right. I often am highly critical of the demonizing, anger-inflaming polemics and inaccuracies of Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and Glenn Beck. But the talk show host who the right can justifiably point to on the left is Mike Malloy. Here is some of his latest rhetoric that is already sparking anger on the right, and he's got a hyperlink. Watch the video in full at the link. If he is not a birther, he is doing a good imitation of one. Malloy here shows how our political culture has declined. The idea that simply lashing out and name calling? You mean like Barack Obama's a socialist, Barack Obama's a Nazi, he's a communist, he's not born here, he's Kenyan. Oh, excuse me, wait a second. Lashing out and name calling and wishing someone dead. The idea that this is political broadcast talk is early. That make any sense? Is early 21st century. I'm sorry. Try to write your sentences better, dude, okay? Comments such of his some years ago would have kept him off the air or gotten him kicked off the air. Footnote, I am not a fan of Dick Cheney or Lynn Cheney, but Malloy's comments here put him in the same category as Michael's Savage on the right, and suggest that perhaps he has a condo next to Alan Keyes on the moon. Jesus Christ, what is this guy? A high school senior? Who is this guy? This is Joe Gandelman, Editor-in-Chief, International Media Politics at The Moderate Voice. Oh, bite my ass, you freak. You know, I get so tired of this. I really do. So tired of it. You know, we have had 25 years of endless vomiting by these right-wing bastards across the fruited plain, on radio, on television, on the internet as it developed, in newspaper columns, all over the place. Filthy right-wing neo-fascists who have done everything to destroy the country, who have used every form of language, every form of innuendo, calling anyone in this country who has ever tried to do anything good something less than a human. So now I pop up out of the rocks, and you right-wing or you so-called moderate whiny-ass bastards have the temerity to say that I am the problem? Here, look here. You see this? Bite me! I know what I know what's going on. You see, those of us on the left are supposed to be quiet or righteously angry like this phony-ass Ed Schultz. You know, we're supposed to get, well, I don't like that. Well, we're going to do this. Sorry, I just can't play that game. And I realize that a lot of so-called moderates, you centrists, you're moderate. Let me tell you something. You know, my good friend Jim Hightower said one time, the only thing you find in the middle of the road is a yellow line and dead armadillos. Which one are you, moderate voice? This program is not for weak-kneed, sobby little twits. It just isn't. There's a goddamn war going on, in case you haven't noticed. This country is flooded day in and day out with neo-fascist right-wing rhetoric. So what am I supposed to look? Tune out the program, you little twits, if it's too much for you. But I will guarantee you, as long as I'm on the air, which will be until I decide not to be on the air, as long as I'm on the air, I'm not going to sit back and offer up this lukewarm milquetoast pablum while the right wing continues to rip this country into a million pieces. Right?
She has been crying, crying. That same sin song. The DJ sucks.
Before the hour, Brian Moynihan, who's the chief executive officer at Bank of America, has said that his bank wants to check its work. See, this is the thing. I mentioned this the other night. Capitalism is such a filthy proposition that it can't even adequately finance houses without bringing the entire global economic system to the brink of collapse. That's how adroit capitalism is. They can't even run a mortgage industry. Look at what has happened. Who did that? Oh, that's right. Acorn. Acorn. Isn't that right, Glenn? Huh? Acorn. Bill Moynihan, Chief Executive Officer, Bank of America, said his bank wants to check its work, which could take a few weeks. As Bloomberg News reports, the halt by U.S. lenders to review documents is just a processing issue and won't affect bank profits, according to Thomas Brown, CEO of Second Curve Capital. His New York-based investment firm specializes in financial companies. Well, attorneys general in all 50 states now have decided to put together a joint investigation into these foreclosures. And the problem with this, this is going to be a complete brick wall when they hit it. It's going to be like, what? It's like a force field. In the first place, in so many of these foreclosures, nobody, not even the people holding the paper, knows who really owns the property. Because don't forget what the banksters did 3, 4, 5, and 6 years ago. They sliced and diced these mortgages, these toxic assets, if such a term exists, into little tiny chunks and bundled them together with other little tiny chunks and then sold them for trillions of dollars to the chumps who are walking down the midway. Hiya, hiya, step right up, get yourself a new instrument, you're gonna make a lot of money. And they did. The investigation by the attorneys general will, among other things, center on claims that employees at these fraudulent lending institutions like Bank of America signed court documents without ensuring the information was accurate. Oh, my God. The wonders of capitalism. They can't even finance mortgages. Good God. From Prairie 2, Economics 101, Supply and Demand. The price in a free market moves up and down according to the balance between supply available and the demand from buyers. Therefore, taking all of the foreclosed houses off the market, which some estimates put at 40% of the market, should drive up the price and solve the equity problems for many homeowners who are underwater, making refinancing much easier. It would also increase property tax revenues and improve the budgets of municipalities. The problem with all that is that the banks won't approve the mortgages, and the socialist Kenyan fascist foreigner in the White House can't get the Congress to do anything about it. Ooh, then I guess we're screwed. Amazing. I had some jerk was on hold here for a while who wanted to tell me that, what was it? Capitalism is not for the weak. No, it's for the most part, it's for the greedy sons of bitches at the very top of the food chain, which I doubt this guy was, and for the suckers. For the suckers! Oh, and coming up next hour, remember last night when I talked about the ghoul Dick Cheney, this blood-drinking bastard who somehow survived what should have been his timely end? I mean, Jesus Christ, if somebody cuts off a chunk of your heart the size of your fist, how in the hell do you stay alive unless, well, you know. So where was Cheney when those pictures were taken? Ah, those ones where he looks like he just needs a couple of gallons of baby blood and he'll be okay. Where was he? Well, he was at a business conference in Bakersfield, California. He was last weekend. Yes, he was. And Sarah Palin was there, and Newt Gingrich, and Karl Rove. And when the conference ended, there were 8 sets of parents who were frantically looking for their children, who seemed to have disappeared. The last time they were seen, Cheney was kind of hovering with his big black, now ill-fitting cloak, trying to draw the children in. Come here, children. Anyway, that's coming up next hour, what Cheney did on his weekend, last weekend. And he got interviewed and a bunch of stuff. Oh, by the way, to close out this hour, an Orthodox rabbi says he's withdrawing his endorsement of Carl Paladino because Paladino apologized for comments he made about gays. Rabbi Yehuda Levin, who represents an umbrella organization of ultra-Orthodox, woohoo, clerics, accused Paladino today of bowing to political pressure when he apologized for saying children shouldn't be brainwashed into thinking homosexuality is acceptable. Levin, speaking in New York in front of St. Patrick's Cathedral, says he can't support Paladino's campaign, quote, until such time as he straightens out, end quote. No pun intended there. He also called on Archbishop Timothy Dolan to join him in speaking out against Paladino. Michael Caputo, you know, a spokesman for the Paladino campaign, he didn't say nothing. Oh, he did. He said something about, you know, the Jews killed Christ. I don't know, man. It's getting crazy.
welcome back. Hey, you know, last night when I mentioned that somebody pulled the stake out of his chest and Cheney was wandering the countryside again looking for baby blood to nourish himself on, I didn't give you the context of where Cheney wound up. There was a traitors conference in, of all places, Bakersfield, California, billed as the Bakersfield Business Conference. It was last Saturday. And that's where the vampire ghoul, Dick Cheney, and his old lady and his daughter and a whole bunch of these people, Sarah Palin, Newt Gingrich, Karl Rove, and there were 10,000 people who in Bakersfield who paid to see this at roughly $500 a pop. Huh? You like that? How about that? One of the people who showed up there, oddly, and the way it's reported by the Bakersfield newspaper is, here's the way it was reported. And thousands gasped as Chesley Sully Sullenberger, the U.S. Airways pilot who pulled off the miracle on the Hudson last year, took the main stage as one of the three special guest heroes. Okay, so Sullenberger was there not as one of these political traitors. He was there to speak motivationally. Goldie Hawn was there also speaking motivationally, but surrounding these two relatively normal people, Sarah Palin, the vampire, Dick Cheney, Newt Gingrich, Karl Rove, Lynn Cheney. Oh, my God. Oh, and who got the biggest applause? Of course, the biggest reception. Sarah Palin. She was introduced by the organizer of this group of traitors, somebody named George Martin. No, not the Beatles producer. As, quote, "Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States!" And the crowd burst into applause, waving flags, giving standing ovations, snapping photos throughout her speech. Sarah stood up there in all her radiant glory. Ah, isn't she wonderful? Oh, my God. She condemned Obama's plans and stimulus packages, which she said had failed to bring Americans jobs. "It is time now," she said. Get this, to stick up for the, her words, little guy. Stick up for the little guy. Oh, Sarah, goddamn, I think that is so wonderful. She said, quote, "This is what the Tea Party is all about, fighting for the working man. The little man has been forgotten for too long. Enough is enough, and we're taking it back." This is what the Tea Party is all about, fighting for the working man. You and I both know that the Tea Party has no more interest in the working man or the working woman than they have an interest in getting bowel cancer. You know that. I know that. But going back to the Hitler quotes, "By the skillful and sustained use of propaganda, one can make a people see even heaven as hell or an extremely wretched life as paradise." Another Hitlerian phrase, "How fortunate for governments that the people they administer don't think." Here's another one. If you tell a big enough lie and tell it frequently enough, it will be believed. And a variation that Hitler said, make the lie big, make it simple, keep saying it, and eventually they will believe it. Now, this is not to equate these scum-sucking people like Sarah Palin and Newt Gingrich and Karl Rove with Hitler. They're far worse than Hitler ever was. The comparison is the fact that they all are fascists, and they all have one goal. and that is to eliminate what Sarah Palin so condescendingly refers to as the little guy. Oh, the little guy. Hi, little guy. How are you? You know, I'm with the Tea Party, and you know, the little man has been forgotten for too long, and enough's enough, and we're taking it back, and I speak for the little man. I am an inarticulate, brain-dead, dumbass, former quitter governor of Alaska who's made about $30 million this year, and I'm really concerned about the little guy. But if you tell the lie often enough and make it big enough, people believe it. The overarching theme of the day, according to the Bakersfield newspaper, ta-da, was that the nation is in economic and cultural crisis. Oh, really? I'll be goddamned. When did that happen? Oh, that's right. It happened on January 20th, 2009, when Barack Obama was made president. The country fell into economic and cultural and societal collapse. We want our country back. We want it away from the Negro and the Jews. The overarching theme of the day, reflected by speakers and event goers alike, was that the nation is in economic and cultural crisis, and a radical course correction is needed right away. Of course. And when people are as distraught and rudderless and being propagandized 24/7, it is very easy, is it not? Ask Adolf. Right, Sarah? Right, Newt? It's very easy for some demagogic freak, Mike, to step into that breach and say, follow me, because I have the answer. And the first thing we have to do is stand up for the little guy. Isn't that what Hitler talked about, the little guy? Because the Jews were spreading disease among the little guys. The Jews were corrupting the great nation of Germany. The Jews had led them into World War I and the horrible, horrible humiliation of the Treaty of Versailles. That was the Jews! Wasn't it, Adolf? Sarah Palin and Newt Gingrich and Karl Rove. It's the liberals! It's Barack Obama! He's a Kenyan. He's a foreigner. Like the Jews in Germany. But the Jews were always in Germany. No, they weren't! This is how it works. 10,000 people turned out for the conference at Cal State Bakersfield. Palin stood before the crowd and roared, "Are we better off than we were before President Obama?" "No!" the crowd screamed back. "Are you better off than before 8 years of the Bush-Cheney murder machine?" Sarah, are we? No, somebody answer that for me. I don't know. Don't confuse me. Make the lie big, make it simple, keep saying it, eventually they will believe it. It's not the truth that matters, only victory. I wonder sometimes to what degree we are going to see the end of the great experiment on November 2nd. I think it's going to be pretty big. Another Hitler quote, "The great masses of the people will more easily fall victim to the big lie than to a small one." And the people who showed up at this conference of traitors in Bakersfield, California last Saturday epitomize that statement by Der Führer. "Are we better off than we were before President Obama?"
No! No!
This really might be our demise.
We'll be right back.
This pack of lies. Hey, Sarah Palin, just because you're good at shooting doesn't mean you have the ammo to negotiate with Putin. Are you on coke? This country's up in smoke. Oh, well.
but a joke.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Also at hand, on hand at this event, Bakersfield, California, last Saturday, this conference of traitors and people who want to destroy America permanently, finally, once and for all, people like Beck, people like Cheney and his ghoulish family. Who else was Gingrich, Palin, the rest of these bastards, Rove. A real conference of people who eventually will be identified as traitors to the United States. Now, what will happen to them? Who knows? But these are people who are trying to fundamentally disrupt fundamentally the process by which this country has tried to govern itself for the past 230 years. And according to the pollsters, they are going to succeed. Yeah. You see, the great strength of the totalitarian state is that it forces those who fear it to imitate it. And these people know that. Cheney was there to be interviewed by his wife, Lynn, the porno writer, the one who likes to write pornography, only she selects homosexual pornography. That is her forte, not heterosexual. I don't know why. But Lynn Cheney writes homosexual, i.e. lesbian pornography. That is her, and not there's anything wrong with that, but these are also people who will do anything they can to demonize, well, you know. As the Bakersfield paper reported, listen to this, in spectacle and speaker lineup, the conference continue to be the kind you can't adequately describe to friends who haven't been there. There was the main tent, the length of nearly three football fields, close to 3,000 flags standing in honor of those killed on 9/11. Now, let me digress. Honor, but there also is a massive mountain of irony in all that, too, isn't there? Since Dick Cheney was responsible for those deaths, every single one of them. And yet this ghoulish bastard was allowed to speak there. 30,000 scoops of ice cream served by 5 p.m. and attendees giddy over the impending arrival of Palin. Ah! Palin! Ah! Jennifer Corin of Bakersfield, who was there with her husband Bob, said, quote, "We're really happy with it. It's a chance to see all the people you see on TV, only you get to see them here live. And you get the feel of America here. All the flags, all the people." End quote. There you go, Jennifer. She added, "It's definitely up to par. Well worth the investment. And it is an investment." Her all-day pass cost her $495. Agreeing with her was Dave Crabtree, a longtime attendee who did the landscaping and attended with his wife, their son, and daughter-in-law. He liked the fact that the conference has switched from every year to every five-year affair. Crabtree said, "The every-year thing was getting, oh, I don't know, you know, it's not as exciting as every 5 years." Conference attendee Michael Bowers said he was enjoying the day as he relaxed in the shade of an umbrella table. He was particularly drawn to see speakers Laura Bush, Mitt Romney, and Donna Brazile. Yeah. Yeah. Al Gore's former campaign manager.
But Mr. Bowers, the field director for Republican Assembly candidate David Belladao, said the conference organizers have some room for improvement in the area of food quality. The lunch was not what he expected, considering the price of a ticket. Huh! Huh!
The conference was held amid a backdrop of many Americans feeling uneasy about the direction of the country and the people running it. Jim Deppen of Bakersfield said, quote, I'm 73 years old. I have 15 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren, and at times I am in despair about the potential of our future if we don't turn it around. This is the most important election of my lifetime. Gloria Puente of Bakersfield, referring to potentially expiring tax cuts, Bush tax cuts, said, everyone's afraid of what's happening after the new year. I paid more attention to the voters' pamphlets this year than I ever have before. Oh, save us. Save us. Won't somebody save us? Sarah! Save us from the Negro, please, Sarah! Save us from the poisonous liberals. Save us from the socialism of the black man in the White House. He is taking us into socialism. Sarah, Newt, please. Please save us. Save us.
It is not the truth that matters, but victory.
And I know they've all been talking about me. Something wrong.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Back in the bad old days of ancient literature, it was said that Caesar's wife had to be above suspicion. Was it Caesar's wife? I think it was somebody's wife. You know, the men could go out and do whatever they wanted to do. But the wives, especially when the husbands were off conquering the world and stuff like that, the wives had to be above suspicion. Virginia Thomas is the wife of Associate Justice Clarence Thomas of the Supreme Court. You know, Uncle Clarence, who has done nothing in the entire time that he has been a Supreme Court justice except follow Antonin Scalia's lead, Fat Tony's lead. That's all Clarence does. And George Herbert Walker Bush, when he nominated Uncle Clarence, he said, this is the most qualified man in America to be a Supreme Court justice. Woo-woo! Well, Virginia Thomas, who, unlike Caesar's wife, wallows in suspicion, is the founder and chief executive of a right-wing neo-fascist organization called Liberty Central. Liberty Central. Sounds like I don't know, some kind of a telemarketing center, doesn't it? Liberty Central. She's the founder and CEO. The founder. It is an organization that was set up to, according to the website, restore the greatness of America. How did they do that? By opposing the leftist tyranny. Tyranny of President Obama and those Democrats in Congress. Ugh. The first contribution to this sinkhole of neo-fascism, this woman, Ginny Thomas, don't get me started. But anyway, according to New York Times editorial page the other day, the first contributions to Liberty Central of $500,000 and $50,000 came from undisclosed
donors. Now, the size of those monetary gifts and their anonymity and their importance to the establishment of Liberty Central raise a series of issues of ethics for Uncle Clarence. Wouldn't you think? Huh? Huh? Sarah Field, who's an executive at Liberty Central, told the New York Times the other day that the organization pays Ginny Thomas. They pay her. Justice Thomas, therefore, is a beneficiary of that pay. Can't not be. And has a responsibility under federal law to, quote, inform himself, end quote, about who the donors are, because they have an impact on his wife's personal financial interests. Doo-doo. Ginny is not legally required to disclose the donors now. That's unfortunate, but she does have a duty to do so. Maybe not a legal obligation, but come on, Ginny, remember Caesar's wife. Ah! Just like Bill Clinton had a duty to disclose the donors to his library and charities ventures when his wife became Secretary of State. Remember all of that? Oh my God, the frothing and foaming and curtain climbing by all these right-wing rat bastards. When Hillary Clinton we want to know everything about Bill Clinton. Where'd you get this? Where'd you do? What's that dollar for? Where'd you get those shoes? What about those glasses? I know you're reading glasses now. Where'd you get those glasses? Remember all that? Huh? But Ginny Thomas? The wife of a Supreme Court justice? Shh, shh, shh. No. Shh, shh, shh. Quiet. You see, Justice Thomas needs disclosure to know if that $500,000 donor or the $50,000 donor or any donor who sloughs money towards his old lady is a party in a case before the Supreme Court or has an interest in a party with a case before the Supreme Court. Right? No? No, Mike. God damn you, you communist, Mike. You dirty communist! We have to know that stuff about Bill and Hillary Clinton, but not about Uncle Clarence and Ginny. No! Don't you see the difference? Uncle Clarence and Ginny are good Americans. Bill Clinton and Hillary are socialist communists like you. Woo, really? Really? The only way Uncle Clarence can comply with a fundamental ethical and legal requirement to disqualify himself in any proceeding in which his impartiality might reasonably be questioned, that's the way the law reads, to disqualify himself in any proceeding in which his impartiality might reasonably be questioned, the only way Uncle Clarence can do that is to find out, as if he didn't already know, who is giving his old lady all this money and why, and disclose their names and their organizations. What do you want to bet some of that comes from the Koch brothers? Huh? Yeah? Even if Ginny weren't being paid by Liberty Central, Justice Thomas would have a duty, the New York Times editorializes, to obtain the donors' names. The principle of a Supreme Court holding requires that. I mean, if you're going to be a justice, shouldn't you know who's giving your old lady money? Big chunks of money! $500,000! Oh, damn. Let me ask you something, Ralph. If somebody gave your old lady $500,000, would you want to know who and why? Wouldn't you? Come on now. Come on, bro. You know you would. Hell, if somebody bought your old lady a cup of coffee, you'd be all over the place. Who was that? What's this about? What's up? What'd you do? You cheated on me. I know how you teabaggers are. But where it concerns Uncle Clarence and Ginny,
$500,000? Oh, no, I'm not interested. Somebody gave my old lady $500,000. No, I don't care. I'll let Jenny go play wherever she wants to if she wants to set up something called Liberty Central. Sorry with me. Somebody gave her $50,000 too? Oh, okay, no problem. I don't care. Don't want to know? Right. As former Justice John Paul Stevens once wrote for the court, quote, the very purpose of the impartiality standard is to promote confidence in the judiciary by avoiding even the appearance of impropriety whenever possible, end quote. That is so quaint. That is so cute. Justice Stevens. Man, you must have been drinking the brandy when you wrote that one. The very purpose of the impartiality standard is to promote confidence in the judiciary? What judiciary? You mean this clutch of morons? Seven of them, anyway. Who sit on the Supreme Court and have ruled, five of them anyway, that a corporation, in contravention to everything that the framers of this country put together, that a corporation has equal standing where it concerns the First Amendment as a human being. Golly damn. Justice Stevens, your line about impartiality might have rung true, what, I don't know, 50 years ago, 60? But now, it's just a joke, right? Justice Thomas, old Uncle Clarence, could claim that he does not know who the donors are and, therefore, could not be biased on their behalf. But people would doubt him. Don't you love the way the New York Times editorial board puts together these sentences? Justice Thomas could claim that he does not know who the donors are and, therefore, could not be biased on their behalf. But, people would doubt him. Only liberals and communists and socialists would doubt him. He is, after all, the most qualified man to sit on the bench in America. Jenny's activities must be above suspicion, so Uncle Clarence can be above suspicion as well. Doesn't that make sense? Remember Caesar's wife? Was it Caesar's wife? Or was it Ulysses' wife? Whose wife was it? I think it was Caesar's wife. Remember, Uncle Clarence, in the Citizens United case, gave corporations an unlimited right to spend money in politics. And he was the only one who also took, of the nine justices, who also took the radical position that the disclosure requirements that are still in federal campaign law are unconstitutional. I'll be damned! Even Fat Tony Scalia and Sammy the Fish Alito didn't go that far, right? But Uncle Clarence is right there, man. Finding out where the money comes from is unconstitutional. Besides, do you have any idea what my old lady Jenny is doing? Before the hour,
I don't know if I've got enough time for this one, but oddly enough, Senator Russ Feingold, a three-term Democrat from Wisconsin who is up for re-election, is up against some freak, a wealthy plastics manufacturer who 6 months ago couldn't even spell the word politics. Now he wants to be one. Guy's name is Ron Johnson. And on Monday night, they had a debate in Wausau, Wisconsin. And as the Times points out, Feingold, of course, being who he is, he knew that the new health care law will not reduce Medicare spending, but will slow its staggering rate of growth. Feingold knew that a vast majority of small businesses would not pay higher taxes if rates went up on the wealthy. And Feingold knew that global warming isn't caused by sunspots. He also knew that without the 2009 stimulus, Obama's plan, there would be at least another 1.5 million people without jobs. But Johnson, on the other hand, that's an appropriate name, proudly proclaimed that he doesn't think this election is about details. That's what he said. That's as good an explanation as any of why candidates like Johnson are in so many polls ahead of their Democratic opponents. Republicans don't like details. They don't want to know anything. Republicans are exactly like the brain dead Germans who listened to Adolf Hitler say, all propaganda has to be popular and has to accommodate itself to the comprehension of the least intelligent of those whom it seeks to reach. Or humanitarianism is the expression of stupidity and cowardice. Of course, that sounds like the terminally insane Glenn Beck. The public's lack of attention in Wisconsin to detail. And remember, the Johnson running against Feingold says this election is not about details. Nah, it's not about details. The Johnson could end Russ Feingold's career. Feingold, in three terms, has distinguished himself for trying to bring families, brought a lot of things to families, but he's tried to bring fairness to campaign finance, tried to bring decency to national security. He has, and this was his fatal error, routinely crossed party lines to work with Republicans. He had the courage to break with his own party more often than almost any other senator. He voted against confirming Tim Geithner as Treasury Secretary. He refused to support the Wall Street reform package because it did not go far enough. And this is most important of all to me, he was the only senator who voted against the so-called USA Patriot Act in 2001. One senator stood against this tide of fascism at the time, Russ Feingold. And now you have this punk-ass Johnson. A Johnson, a plastics manufacturer, who says he has long believed that government restricts business and individual liberties. How did you become a wealthy plastics manufacturer, you miserable bastard, Johnson? How did you do that? Were your freedoms restricted? Huh? Were your individual liberties restricted? Huh? Were your desires to produce products that will kill people restricted? No, Johnson. But you see, Johnson decided to run for office when the health care bill passed. He claimed that Obama was trying to create a socialist state. Son of a bitch. A socialist state. The great strength of the totalitarian state is that it forces those who fear it to imitate it. Through clever and constant application of propaganda, people can be made to see paradise as hell, and also the other way around, to consider the most wretched sort of life as paradise. the great masses of the people will more easily fall victims to a big lie than to a small one. Barack Obama is a socialist! Really? If there were anyone ever to hold the office of the President of the United States who was less of a socialist than Barack Obama, I don't know who it would be, unless it would have been the brain-dead Ronald Reagan, perhaps. Barack Obama? A socialist? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. The art of leadership consists in consolidating the attention of the people against a single adversary and taking care that nothing will split up that attention. Barack Obama! The socialist! So, Russ Feingold, what the hell has happened in Wisconsin? Several polls in that state have shown that the number of likely voters who consider themselves conservative has risen from a quarter of the population to nearly half. Wisconsin? I mean, okay, Joe McCarthy, but Wisconsin? Oh, my God. So Russ Feingold may be defeated by a wealthy plastics manufacturer who believes that Barack Obama is trying to create a socialist state. And the Johnson also says he has long believed that government restricted business, except his, and individual liberties, except his. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.